My name's Steve and I'm an alcoholic. However, just to make you, Morgan, this is the online version of the Pacific Rim meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is an open meeting and all members of the community are welcome to join. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics will participate in our meetings. Good evening. My name is Steve, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group Meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. Much Nilo for reading chapter 5. I would now like to introduce our first speaker, Rebecca H.
Hey, Rebecca Alcoholic. Wow, I wasn't expecting this at all. This is an interesting format to be with all of you guys. I certainly miss you. God, I miss you guys a lot. My dad and his beautiful wife are here with us too. I'm up in the Pacific Northwest right now. My dad lives up in Seattle, and him and his wife both have 41 years of sobriety. It's just really neat that they're able to be here with you guys, and I love being able to walk this path with them. Please excuse me. This is a very interesting format and totally unexpected. I love Pacific Group. I love this meeting. This is where I got sober. I also want to thank Duffy for asking me to speak. I think, I don't know. I started a new job today and the job, going to start a new job is really nervous, but I kept thinking about speaking tonight, which is horrible. And I got more nervous from doing that than actually starting my first day at work. I just kept thinking about it and then I would just feel like I'd have to throw up. But anyway, with that aside, it is an honor to be asked to speak. I did get sober in Pacific Group. I have much love and respect for this group. It completely changed my life. And God, I can't even put that in words, you know, how much this group has changed my life. My sobriety date is July 25th, 2011. Yvonne is my sponsor. And my current home group is Edgewood. We meet up in Seattle, Pacific Northwest, and I love that group, but it's nothing like where I got sober. There's always something special about where I got sober, and I took my first drink when I was 12. I absolutely fell in love with the effect produced by alcohol. I traded everything worthwhile to constantly chase that effect. And, I traded all my self-respect and self-esteem. And I ended up actually on the streets for a number of years. I never imagined in a million years thought that I would end up there. I had high aspirations as a young girl growing up. I certainly wasn't raised that way, but that's just my story. And that's where alcohol had taken me. I ended up on the streets. I was in and out of jails. I was in and out of hospitals. I was in and out of institutions. My father, who raised me and again, didn't raise me to be like that. There were years where he didn't even know where I was at. There were local police officers actually who would call him and let him know where I was at. And, being a mom, like I can't imagine, what that had to have been like. But that's where my drinking took me. And I got used to living like that for a number of years. I was in and out of AA for a number of years. And you know, and I came to you, you know, broken. I came to you absolutely broken, absolutely out of answers. Man, I was broken. I was so broken. And, what happened for me was alcohol stopped working for me. And there's some people that can relate to that. Some people that can't relate to that, you know, and basically what that means is that I love to drink, and drinking blocked out everything. It blocked out everything, you know, all the horrible things that were happening on the streets and around me and all the things I was seeing, like, I didn't care, like, it blocked it out. And what happened is it stopped blocking it out anymore, and it stopped working. And I started, you know, I was at that point that the book talks about, that jumping off point where I can't imagine life with or without alcohol, you know, and that is a lonely, horrible place to be. And I remember that feeling vividly. And I remember also thinking, because I've been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for so many years, that AA wouldn't work for me. You know, that I, and man, what a lie that was. And, but I was completely broken, and I was out of answers, and I came to you a loser, you know, really a loser, an absolute loser. I had burned every opportunity to the ground. I had alienated myself and my family. I was not living honorably at all. And completely justified living like that too, you know? And so I came to you a loser and out of answers and broken. And, you know, and I remember, you know, I actually got Yvonne as a sponsor, who I love this woman, and I will love her and honor her till the day I die. The things, and the longer I stay sober and realize how much she poured into my son and my life, I love her. And not only her, there were so many people from this group that just kept pouring into me, you know, and what kept me coming back was, you know, I didn't feel like I can identify with you guys. It was just my self-centeredness. I could, you know, now, of course, you know, I know I can identify with every single one of you. But then I didn't feel like I could identify with you. But what kept me coming back was you guys made it attractive. You know, I mean, I remember looking at you guys were laughing, you guys were loving each other. You guys were making light of the situations where you came from. And you guys remembered my name, you know, and I remember like, and I don't want to name drop here or anything like that, but I do want to give a shout out to Marianne King, because I remember when I came in and I had 30 days of sobriety, and I had such low self-esteem because the actions that I was taking was just horrific, you know. And I remember Marianne remembered my name, and I remember her reaching her hand out to me and welcoming me. And I remember how that felt, you know, that someone with honor and integrity remembered my name. It had been a long time since someone had done that. And that's what you guys did, you know, and Yvonne, you know, she threw me into action immediately. You know, she didn't beat me upside the head with a big book and start quoting me this stuff. You know, she started getting me into action immediately. And it's reminded, you know, it's pointed out to me that there are several people that are out on the streets that know the book more than most of us, you know, that are not sober and, but aren't taking the action. And what that looked like was Yvonne had me go to a meeting every single day, you know, simple stuff. She had me go to a meeting every single day. She had me show up early. She had me get commitments at every single meeting I went to. She had me go to yard every single Saturday. Did I like it? No, I didn't like it. You know, I was a single parent. You know, I had no car my first 18 months of sobriety. I was living in a homeless transitional living because of my drinking. You know, I completely burned my life to the ground. But you know what? You guys didn't care. You said, get to a meeting anyway. Get to a meeting anyway. And you know what? I was living in Inglewood and I went to a meeting. Sometimes it took 2.5 hours for me to get to a meeting, and I went, you know, and you said, we'll get you home. And that's not any kudos to me. That's kudos to you, because you made it attractive to me. You gave me something to where you gave me hope. You gave me hope. And little by little, I started taking that action. And Yvonne and I started reading the book every Sunday night after Ohio Street. And things started happening. You know, a fellowship grew up about me. You know, this love that I felt so apart from, you know, started to come up around me. And you guys, man, God, you picked up this broken spirit, and just like, I had no idea the life that God had in store for me sitting on that detox bed. I had no idea life could be this good. I had no idea what it felt like to be comfortable in my own skin, what it felt like to be a good mother. You know, my son, when I got here, was 2.5 years old, and I alienated ourselves. When he was brought into this world, there was no one here to welcome him. No one. And he was neurotic, and he was crazy because of me, because of my drinking. And what you did is you loved us and you taught me how to be a parent. And you know what? It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen overnight. And I still, you know, and the thing is like being able to be there for this little boy who's now 11 and he's awesome. He's so awesome. You know, he's in Taekwondo and he got an award for kindness in front of the whole school. He got this award for being for kindness. And, you know, and he's a cross guard and he got an award for mathematics. And man, I got high hopes for him, you know, and he was born addicted and he was born in here just crazy. And, you know, he wasn't dealt, you know, good cards. And, but because of you and because of your examples, you know, you it rippled out to this little boy and my father, you know, my father, who didn't know where I was at for several years and just kind of getting these glimpses, you know, when I was in jail and you know, whatever. And, you know, when I turned one, I asked my dad to come up here for a watch and he did. He was hesitant because he had seen me turn one before, but he decided to come up and he had no idea what a watch was, you know, and there was probably 150 people there. And he thought they were all for me. He didn't realize that it was all, you know, you guys were sponsored director to be there, but he thought you were there for me. And, you know, my dad and my, and Debbie was on, at midnight, she was on the, she was on the speakerphone and, you know, you guys wished me happy birthday and watched me turn one. And my dad got to see that and be a part of that. And for the first time, you know, he knew I was in good hands, you know, and something healed with my dad and I that weekend. And today we're, you know, he's my best friend and he's proud of his daughter. And I love it how he introduces me to his friends, you know, and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, I love this deal. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe so much to you. So many giants in this meeting. And I miss you guys, man. I mean, I love my meeting, but I miss you guys. I don't know. I think that's it. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. And I'm glad to hear Mike's doing so great. That's amazing. Just to let you know, everybody's clapping for you. Our next speaker is Norman L.
Hello. Norman L., alcoholic.
Hi, sober. Norman.
Hello. I'm sober 31 years, 6 months, and 11 days today. My sponsor is Joe S., and I'd like to thank Duffy for asking me to speak. And I want to thank Rebecca for her talk. She's from one of my favorite cities. My son, Jordan, who's supposed to graduate in June from Seattle University, was sent home because of this virus. They closed the school down. And my daughter, Rebecca, also, who is at Tacoma at the University of Puget Sound, they sent her home too. So part of the silver lining of this thing is that I get to be with 3 of my kids and we're enjoying our time together. I just want to say that I am still concerned about drinking and smoking pot, even at 31 years, 6 months, and 11 days. It still looks good to me. So if you're a newcomer and you're coming in here, and bless you to be able to do this without having a live meeting, I am a day away from my next drink or smoke. So I need Alcoholics Anonymous. I need everybody here. And it's a plan that keeps on giving. The main reason I'm not doing it is because I like my life today. When I got sober in 1988, I wasn't off the street. In fact, I had a 5-bedroom house. I had a Mercedes Benz. I had 3 beautiful children and I had a wife and a business. And I was drinking every single day. I was a bar drinker. I loved drinking in the bars. And I had my own bar. It was called Paul's Kitchen in Monterey Park. I had my own seat. And it was the first one. And if anybody remembers Cheers, they had Norm at the corner. And my name was Norm then. It's Norman now. And I had a seat. Nobody sat in that seat. And I was a bar psychologist. I solved everybody's problems. The bartender came to me for solutions. And they were alcoholic solutions. And I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop drinking. And I, for many, many days prior to that fateful day when I quit, September 17th, my last drink, I said, I'm not going to drink alcohol today. I'm not going to drink it. I was trying it on self-will. I had let that water hit me in the shower in the morning, and I would say, not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. This is it. My last day. No more drinking. And as soon as that bar opened at 11 o'clock, I was the first one in line to get into that bar and order that drink. And it was, at the end, it was Tanqueray and a little vermouth. It was about that much Tanqueray and about this much vermouth. And I drank every single day, even on the weekends. Sometimes I drank beer on the weekends. I thought that wasn't drinking. So one day my ex-wife at the time told me that she was making dinner for us. That was September 17th. She was making dinner and she said, come right home after work. So I said, I'll be there. She was a school teacher, so she didn't cook often because she was working hard. School teachers work really hard. And shout out to all the school teachers out there. I'm a retired school teacher. And I said, I'll come right home. So after 5 o'clock, when I was closed my business, instead of going home, I went right to the bar and I started drinking. And after a few drinks, I decided I was going to make it home. And I drove that car best I could to my house. I didn't go on the freeway because the freeway was a bad place to be when you're drunk. In those days, it was kind of like now, not that much traffic. So I was able to drive as fast as I want on the freeway. But when you're drunk, I would drive about 15, 20 miles an hour on the freeway. So I went down the side streets. I went down the alleys. I had all my own little route. I held one hand on the car so I wouldn't tip over. I covered one eye so I'd only see one line. And I made it home and she said, here's your dinner. It's cold and you're late. And I said, I don't want this crap anyway. That's not cussing, is it, Steve? It's not. I threw this stuff away and I made myself, which I hope was my last drink. It was vodka and pink grapefruit juice. And I laid there in my den, drinking that drink, half of it going in my mouth, half of them going on my shirt. And my little angel of a daughter, she's just had my fifth grandchild. And she was 11 years old at the time. And she came to me and said, Dad, if you keep drinking, you're going to kill yourself. And I don't know. It was just like, it was my higher power because I had no reason why. I poured that drink out. And that was the last drink I had. That was September 17th, 1988. I did. She told me to quit smoking too. And I threw that cigarette pack of Marlboro box away, but I started smoking again. And I quit a year and a half later. I thank God I did because I wouldn't want to be a recent ex-smoker now with what's going on. But anyway, so I was without my friend, alcohol. Alcohol was my best friend. I drank everywhere at my house. If I went to your house, I would know where the booze was. I know what cupboard was in. I would go and make myself a drink. If you didn't have booze and I didn't have booze, I wasn't going over. It was just a big part of my life. I love drinking. So I had my friend was gone, no drinking. But I had a real friend who was sober a year in Alcoholics Anonymous. His name was Bruce. And he, I thought, was a worse drunk than me. He fell asleep on the freeway drunk. He hit the center divider. He was obnoxious at parties like I was. And I was obnoxious as well. Sometimes I'm still obnoxious, but I'm better. And he was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So he said, Norman, I'll take you to some meetings. So he took me to meetings every night for a week, and different kinds of meetings. And I was, you know, it was helping. I wasn't drinking. And, you know, it's a miracle that I didn't drink because, you know, I drank every single day. I don't know. My higher power must have been working in my life because there's no way I couldn't drink. And after a week, he said, you know, you're on your own. So I started going to meetings on my own. And, you know, home life wasn't good. But I was just thinking about not drinking because I really wanted to drink. And I got them out of their meeting directory. Newcomers get a meeting directory, get a big book. And I just circled all the meetings in my neighborhood and went to all these meetings. And I thought the people weren't that friendly to me. A lot of them were older people. I was 38, I guess, you know. I'm going to be 70 this month. So they were macrameing in the back, the women, and they weren't, nobody shook my hand or my perception. And finally, some young kid came up to me and circled all these meetings and shook my hand, circled all these meetings. And I started going to those meetings in circle, and they were all Pacific Rim meetings. So I ended up going to Pacific Rim meeting, and newcomers, if you ever go to the Pacific Group meeting and you don't have a sponsor, be careful, because they harassed me. It was constant. Get a sponsor. Get a sponsor. Get a sponsor. And, you know, I'm this pseudo-intellectual. I'm college educated. And I own my own business. I was looking for the ideal sponsor. And finally, somebody just said, get him. They pointed this guy, and it was Tom Hoy. And Tom Hoy saved my life. We worked the steps. It's hard to speak 10 minutes because I had a lot of crap happening in my first year. But I'll tell you, I got really tied into the group. I started calling people. I took commitments. He said, go to 6 meetings, 7th meeting, hang out with your kids. And I got commitments in every meeting. I got really active. I went to the yard. I did all the stuff we do. And then in my first year, the hit the fan. And I'm going to try to respect the meeting. But it was bad. My life fell apart. My wife kicked me out of the house. I was losing my business. And my father was dying of cancer. And I had a big resentment from him. I don't have time to get into it all. But what happened was is that I had to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps. And I don't know if I would have been able to do that if it wasn't for being in such pain. I was in total pain and anguish, and I couldn't work. My sponsor told me, just lock up your place and take a walk around the block, call people. And that's all I did, because I was too distraught to work. But I was distraught enough to take those steps seriously. And I worked that 4 step. I called my sponsor up after a couple weeks, and I said, time for a 5th step. And I met him, and he said, we're not quite ready. I want you to go home and write more about your father. And I wrote all about my father, the resentment I had to him. And he was dying in a hospice, and I went over to the hospice, and I made amends to him, and it changed my life. I let that resentment go. I was there when he died. I was there when he was buried, and it changed my whole life. And Alcoholics Anonymous, newcomers, go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps, especially that 9th step, because that 9th step changed my life. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Norm, very much. Great hearing from you. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group conscious in much the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Thank you, Layla, very much. Tonight, I'd like to introduce our main speaker, Allison R. Allison?
Am I unmuted? Yes. Hi, my name is Allison. I'm an alcoholic. I can't answer you, but I know that you guys are there, and it's all very exciting. What a crazy time and world we are all living in. I want to thank Duffy for asking me to speak. And I want to thank just all the leaders of Pacific Group who, I don't even think you guys missed a week. You just rolled right into the Zoom situation. It's quite incredible, aside from all the things that happen, all the meetings during the week, the yard, the parties, like they're just right there ready to party. So, it's amazing just the structure and how you guys have been able to keep it rocking. It was so fun in the beginning to see everybody. I couldn't exactly hear what you guys were saying, but there were voices, and that was cool. And it was so great to see people that I haven't seen in a little while. I actually, I live in Glendale, but because of what's going on right now, I have two kids and a husband, and we decided to come to Chicago. So this is my aunt's couch, where she's like the one family member we're allowed to see. So I have my children at my parents' house, and I have abandoned them to come here and be with you, which is awesome. I don't know the last time I've been up since 10 o'clock. It's fantastic. And it's crazy because I'm from here. I drank here, and I've lived in Los Angeles now for 10 years. And before that I was in Boston for 3. And this is like the south suburbs of Chicago is where I am right now. And I lived in the city of Chicago for many years as well. And so there's something about when I come back here, like all of the old stuff that I did comes rushing back. And I ended up marrying this guy who I used to drink with. This is my first boyfriend ever. I met him. We have parties here in like garages because it's cold. So you go out into the garage, you put a keg there, and then you get like a space heater. And maybe you lift the garage halfway up so like the cigarette smoke gets out. I don't know. So I went to this garage party, and at the time I had a broken leg. I had broken it in a blackout. I had woken up in my like childhood bed, my parents' house where I'm staying. I woke up one morning and my mom was like, "Where's your car?" And I was like, "I don't know, but I think my leg is broken." And it was. And so we went, I think I was like 18. Yeah, I was 18. So we got a little cast put on her. And then a couple weeks later, I ended up getting a DUI with the cast. And so there was like a tie-dye cast, and now there's a DUI. So this is what my life is looking like at 18. Like, we're going big. And so obviously in this state, I was still at a party because I'm not going to let this slow me down in any way. And so I walked into this party, and there was this lovely man, and he was passed out next to a keg. And long story short, I married him. We have two children. It's just what happened. And there was a big gap in there. But so we drank together here. And so we've been talking since we've been back, and he's sober too now, about like we used to drink in fields, and it would always be like the dead of winter, but it didn't matter. And I like what Norman was saying about like, I didn't consider beer drinking. Like, that's what you do between trying to get drunk. Beer is just like a filler. You know, people don't get drunk off beer. It doesn't even make sense. And so that was like my Midwestern drinking career. I don't come from a family of alcoholics, for whatever that's worth. I don't know. They talk in the book about the invisible line. I don't know that I had an invisible line. I've heard so many people talking about like, oh, I was drinking and then I had fun, and then I had fun with problems, and then I had problems. And I just feel like I started drinking and there were problems. Now, I was sort of fine with the consequences. And I always feel like the best way to describe it is when I was a freshman in high school. So I picked up my first drink when I was 14. I'm sober since Christmas Eve 2004. And I picked up my first drink when I was 14. And I don't remember really having any feelings about that. Like, it was neither bad nor good. It just was the time that alcohol was presented to me. And I was like, this feels right. And it was at a standard Midwestern keg party. And the first time I drank was the first day, also the first night I smoked a cigarette, and also the first time I ever smoked pot. I was like, let's just get it going. And then I just remember like the next morning, I got a lot of attention, which I was very into. I mean, it was all negative attention, but that was perfectly fine. And so when I was a freshman, I had my first drink, and I was in a bathroom at school, and I went to it was a public school, but it was very strict and clean. And so if you're smoking in a bathroom, they're going to know. So I was smoking in a bathroom, and I got in trouble, and I was going to get suspended for 3 days. I just was bawling. I was so, my parents, of course, also teachers. My parents are both teachers, they're retired. So I'm bawling and I'm so remorseful. And I'm like, oh, this is so terrible. And I can't believe I was smoking. And I just feel so horrible. And my mom has to come get me. And then I have to go to inner school suspension for 3 days. And this is just like awful. So that's 14 years old. Fast forward to 17 when I was graduating from high school. And this time I get caught with drugs in my purse. I have a bowl. It's not really drugs, right? It's like a bowl and some weed, but I guess this is bad. And so I get caught with drugs in my purse. And now I just don't care. Like, let's keep it moving. I don't care. I don't care that my mom, who's a principal in another district, has to come get me out of school. I don't care that this is, of course, like the last day of my senior year. So they've talked about like, maybe I'm not going to graduate. I'm like, I also don't care. I was irritated that I was still in school because it was the last day of high school of my whole life. It was a short day, but I was still there because I got in trouble because of these drugs. Like, who cares? Let's all move on. And so already in that short span, like if I had started to read the book when I was 17 years old, I absolutely would have been able to identify. But I didn't get here until I was 24, which is still, you know, I remember reading that line in the book about, you know, sometimes women, I can't remember what it says, but it's basically says like, you know, sometimes women are more far gone, like they have the effects even sooner. And I remember being so offended, like, how dare you? I'll drink any of you under the table. You can't tell. But it was true. I was 24. I just couldn't hang. I was out. And so, you know, the progression had already been there. You know, I had gotten in trouble a little bit as a freshman. Now I'm getting in trouble as a senior. And I just am like, let's move it on. And, you know, my sponsor's on the meeting tonight with her husband. And one of the things that came up in my fifth step with her, you know, and I remember she would say some really mean things to me when I did my fifth step. So the way that she does it, which is horrific, and all my sponsees, if they're on here, they've had to do it too this way. So basically, like, you know, you write your resentments, which is so fun. And then you flip the page and you're like, oh, I don't know. I should never have been friends with them. You know, you have to come up with whatever your things are, or whatever your part is. And so during my fifth step, my sponsor is writing my sixth step. So she's just writing all my defects, everything in my, I'm like, all, these are all the things she doesn't like about me. So we finished my fifth step and she's like, cool. So Allison, here's just some fun facts about you. You're slutty, you're rude, you're not a nice person, you're mean to people. It's just going down the list. Well, one of the things that came up, and I think she pushed me on it, was how embarrassing it must have been for my mom to have to go from another district to get her kid who's going to be suspended for having drugs. Like, that would ever occur to me. That never occurred to me. By the time I did my fifth step, my first one, I was probably a year sober. And it's still like, I'm flipping the page and I just can't come up with anything on my part with my mom. I'm like, I don't know, you know, like, she's kind of mean and I guess I should have made my bed more, you know, like, I just can't come up with anything. And my parents, which is also why it's nice that I'm at my aunt's house, they understand that I'm sober. Now, mind you, you know, at that same time that I had a broken leg, I had inadvertently crawled in bed with my parents on numerous occasions for just completely unknown reasons. Like, I was just, I don't know why, like, the way that our house is built, I think I walked down a hall, got very confused and went into the wrong room and just like lifted their covers from the bottom and just crawled in there as like, you know, an adolescent, like a teenager. It seems like they would feel like maybe I wasn't having the healthiest relationship with the alcohol. I also got a broken leg while I lived there. I got a DUI while I lived there. I was getting in trouble in school. But like, when I said to them, like, I think I'm getting sober, they were honestly horrified. They're like, what do you mean? Like, what is AA? I don't need to know anything else about this. And so it's sort of like a don't ask, don't tell policy. Like, I do AA. That's my deal. I'm sober. It's cool. They don't need to participate. So when I was doing the amends process, it was very awkward because they're like, we don't even think you have a problem. This is bizarre. Like, what is this situation? So, but I still had to make these amends. And, you know, obviously I didn't thwart them on, you know, I didn't like force them on I asked and said, like, can I make this amend? And they sort of begrudgingly agreed. And so the biggest thing with my mom was I had this moment where I said, like, I can't imagine how embarrassing it must have been for you as an administrator in another school to have to come get your like drug addicted kid. I mean, again, it was weed. Nobody's addicted to it. Anyway. And that kind of got her, you know, like she had a little, like you could tell she was grateful that I had said that to her. Whatever has happened since then, she didn't become like an AA cheerleader. I don't have, you know, what Celeste and I talk about and what Kenna and I had talked about, because Kenna sponsored me for many years, was just that like the way that Alcoholics Anonymous is working in my parents' life is they just, not that they're not, but they just get to believe that I was just kind of weird and I just straightened out and they're just like really good parents and everything's awesome, you know? Not that they're not good parents, but we don't address my 12-step program. And so that was kind of a big thing for her. I think that was meaningful for her. And that's, for me, just where a sponsor has been so valuable is, just helping me with those blind spots in what my part is on stuff. And, you know, I know I tend to, I'm not a very linear thinker. It tends to go all over the place, but this last year I had some issues. And again, here comes Celeste rolling in with these horrible things she says to me. She said, I had two resentments that seemed similar. They were, they were affecting me financially, and they were with women that I worked with. And she asked me to do a four step, which I was like, no problem. All my resentments. And then I flipped the page and I'm like, probably should have never met them. That's my part. I should get a new job. That's on me. But that's like as far as I could get. I could not figure it out. As a matter of fact, Wendy, I think Wendy's on here. Hi. I asked kindly Wendy to sit on the phone with me while I tried to figure out my part in one of these resentments, because the resentment was so big and I felt so justified. I just couldn't see it. And luckily Wendy sat there with me and talked. I was on maternity leave, like walking, pushing a stroller on the phone with Wendy, like, what? I just don't see my part. And eventually when I kind of got closer, it's like, you know, my sponsor like leaves the breadcrumb. She's like, are you maybe sometimes like a little curt with people if provoked, you know, like, oh, do you think sometimes when somebody says something? And finally one day she's just like, yeah, you're self-righteous, judgmental, and mean. I'm like, oh. I'm like 15 years sober. And I was like, what are you even talking about? I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like one of the nicest people, I think. And for some reason, like I don't think it's behind me, but for some reason, once we finally got there, now I'm like noticing in my life, like, oh, that was maybe not the nicest thing to say. Oh, that's potentially like slightly judgmental. Oh, maybe we can get off our high horse on that one. And it's so indicative of what my experience has been here, because I come in with these defects. So sorry. Okay. Drunken husband, keg party, drinking, 18. This all just continues. I meet Robbie Blackburn. We have a great time. We're both like drunken buffoons. And this just accelerates until I'm living in the city. I'm breaking up with Robbie every weekend and getting to, you know, it's like I like to break up with him at noon and like get together with someone at 2. And then I'm back together with Robbie at 4. And I'm just like causing all this chaos. And I had one friend who I knew she was sober, but I didn't know what that meant. And for whatever reason, my last drink was... I didn't mean for it to be my last drink, but I called her one morning, you know, the line in the Big Book where it says like pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I didn't have to look that up. I didn't need somebody to like explain to me like, huh, what do they mean by that? Like I got it. And so, you know, people talk about like a moment of clarity or a God shot or, you know, for whatever reason, the next morning I called this girl that I knew was sober. I didn't think I really want to go to AA. I didn't think I want to stop drinking. I didn't think any of those things. God picked up the phone and called this girl. And my journey started. She took me to a meeting in Chicago called the California Group. And unbeknownst to me, it was a branch off of the Pacific Group. I didn't know I was going to later move to Los Angeles. I didn't know anything. It was just the first meeting that I ever went to. And that's where I met my sponsor, Celeste. She was actually just engaged at the time to her current husband. And she was super, you know, she was both super nice and super Chicago-ish. Like I remember I lived very close to the meeting, but somehow insisted that she drive me home. I mean, it was like 4 blocks. It was ridiculous. And I remember getting out of her car, which is weird because I'm not even like a warm person or like, I don't know, but I got out of her car and I was like, did you want a hug? And she was like, I'm good. Thank you so much. But then at the same time, you know, I could see looking back, she like totally invited me to her wedding. You know, I just met her and it was super nice and I felt included. And it was a big deal because I was like at a wedding and people, I think at her wedding, people were drinking, but like, I just went, you know, our little sober group weren't drinking. And that was a first for me. And I remember the girl that I had called to take me to my first meeting. These were my questions. I mean, and I know it sounds silly now because you're like, oh, that's so obvious. But my questions were, how much does it cost? What about my wedding? What about New Year's? You're, obviously, you drink on New Year's. It doesn't make sense. You're not going to not drink on New Year's Eve. That doesn't, it's stupid. And I remember I was like, but what about my wedding? Now, I was 24 years old and at the time had like three boyfriends. And none of them, I don't think. I mean, actually, one of them I married, so never mind. But I remember I was like, what about my wedding? And she was like, I'm sorry, Allison, are you very close to matrimony? Like, why do you even care? Like, nobody wants to marry you. I don't think we need to figure that out right now. But those are like my big concerns. And, you know, it took me a long time in sobriety to understand that I was now sober. So I participated in a lot of, you know, questionable behavior. And luckily, you know, my sponsor gave me sort of just enough rope to hang myself with. I bartended while I was sober. My first birthday, so I was 24 when I got sober. I turned in December, and in August, so I was like 8 months sober, I turned 25. So I did what I always did. I threw a keg party in somebody's garage in the city. We used to call it the Chateau. We had grocery cart races in the back. And everybody that I had ever drank with was there, including my drug dealer. And I was the first person to, I was the only sober person there. And eventually I had to leave my own party because it was like pandemonium. Like, it was crazy. Potentially not the smartest choice, but those were the choices that I made. And, you know, I just could not let go of the old identity. I was so afraid of this is, you know, I did not hide my drinking. I always defended my right to drink. And if you said like, oh, Allison, you're an alcoholic, I'm like, yeah, damn right I am. I love alcohol. It's so great. You're a loser. This is awesome. And so, you know, when I first got sober, I would leave the meeting and go to the bar because that's all my friends were. And I would just sit there and drink water and white knuckle it. So it's really a testament to Alcoholics Anonymous, like Rebecca was saying, that I'm still here, you know, because I remember one of my girlfriends, I vacillated so much in my first year about, am I alcoholic or am I not? Am I an alcoholic? Am I not? My parents aren't alcoholic. Well, I just, you know, I don't know. I just really struggled with it. It really wasn't until I finished my fifth step that I did that, like admitted to my innermost self that I really, you know, would never have a healthy relationship with alcohol ever again. Like, it took a while for me to kind of figure that out. And I remember I had made a friend in AA and she had called and said like, do you want to go to the meeting? Now, again, this is the meeting I live like four blocks away from. And I was like, you know, thank you so much for asking, but I've been thinking about it and I'm just not an alcoholic. She was like, oh my God, that's so great. Good for you. But do you want to just walk with me over there? And I was like, okay, we'll just smoke butts. It'll be great. And so I did. I just walked her over to the meeting and I got there and they're, you know, I'd been going for a couple weeks or whatever it had been. And they're like, oh, hey, Allison, how's it going? And I'm like, I'm great. I guess I just want to say goodbye because it turns out like I'm not an alcoholic. And they're like, oh my God, that's good. That's so great. But do you mind, like, we're actually cutting. We had the same like structure as Ohio Street. So we would have like cheese and crackers before the meeting. And they're like, can you come help us like make the cheese and crackers? And I was like, sure, no problem. And nobody said like, you're an alcoholic and you're so stupid. And eventually, of course, I end up staying for the meeting. And then the end I'm crying and I'm like, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. Like, but people were just not, you know, like nobody was trying to force the idea that I was an alcoholic onto me and really said like, oh, that's great. You had a keg party for your birthday. How'd that go? Good for you. You know, nobody wanted what I had. They didn't care. And when I was about maybe 9 months sober, there were a couple auditions. I was doing comedy and acting at the time. And these auditions came in and I went and auditioned for them and I didn't get them. And one of them was like super bad. Like everybody was standing on a stage and they're like, great, if we call your name, we want to see a little bit more. Otherwise, thanks for the memories. And they called like everybody's name except for me. So like in front of all my peers, I had to get off stage and like get my purse and walk out to the theater while everybody like look. I was just, and so I walked, I remember I was like on Belmont in Chicago and I was crying and I had to go to the meeting. I said, saw Celeste, and I'm like, you lied to me. Like, what about the promises? This is garbage. And she was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. We're having an AA play and we really need you to be in it. It was like, I don't remember if it was like the California group anniversary or if it was like our Christmas pageant. I have no idea, but I was so furious. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, yeah, it's so great. We really need someone for our production of Cats or whatever. I think we sang like Seasons of Love. And I was real mad. And I was like, AA doesn't work. You lied. This place sucks. I'm out. No promises for me. It was just super newcomer drama. And And then I did. I like went into the play and I did it. And, you know, I feel like I always had a bad attitude, but I was so spiteful. Like I was like, I'm going to do this dumb thing you just suggested because I know it's not going to work. And then you'll get to see that your ideas are so stupid. And don't you think it's weird that my sponsor thinks I'm judgmental and self-righteous and mean? That's so weird. But then by the time I took the action, it had actually worked. And then I forgot what my problem had been. And that's been my experience the whole time I've been sober. About 6 months after that, so I was maybe a year and a half sober, more auditions come. This time I get it. And I moved to Boston. So I ended up moving there to perform at a theater there. And it was like the first shift in my program. And I've had a couple more since then. And so I've had to learn to sort of like bend and twist with my program. And there's been a lot of spots that have been kind of dicey. You know, at that point I was performing 7 shows a week or something, or 6 shows a week. And, you know, my old home group from Boston just sent me a Zoom invitation. Like, it's amazing, you know? And some of the people from my old home group in Boston now live in Palm Springs, and I get to see them at conferences. And then I lived there for 3 years and I ended up moving to Los Angeles. And then, you know, over the past couple of years, like I said, my current husband, he's the only husband I've ever had, but whatever, he bounced back. He ended up coming back into my life. And one of the places that I had a lot of judgment and self-righteousness was, he got sober, which he definitely needed to, you know. He, for the years that I had been in the program, I would get calls from people being like, Robbie's going to die. He's not going to make it. He was a daily heroin user. And he was ended up being found. Like, it was another just like stroke, you know, moment. It was God working in our lives, I guess. And he was found non-responsive in his home. One of his friends just decided to check in on him, and he ended up having endocarditis, and he had to have a heart valve replacement, and all these things happened. And long story short, he moved here when he was about a year and a half sober, moved to Los Angeles. And then we were doing Pacific Group and it was awesome. And we went to Mountain High and we were like doing all the stuff and it was so great. And then I had my first daughter and he just stopped doing AA. And I was just like, I lost my mind. And I had a new baby and it was really crazy. And, you know, no matter what you think, it wasn't that. And so I had a new daughter and a husband that wasn't going to AA anymore. And I just like kind of spun out about that. And I remember being at Sunday Night Ohio and people would say like, how's it going? How's life? What's up? And I'm like, well, I'll tell you what's not up. Robbie and AA, that's not working out, is it? You know? And I just, this was like my shtick. And Marty one day was like, Allison, nobody cares. Stop talking about Robbie. Nobody cares. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is so rude. But I stopped talking about Robbie. And I don't know, I took a ton of direction around that from everybody, from literally probably everybody here that's listening. I took a ton of direction around what to do about that. And really the epiphany became like, you know what? Robbie's totally sober. He does his thing. And that's not the thing that works for me. I do my thing. I don't know if that works for me. I'm just going to keep doing my thing. And I had to stop sort of like being on him about how I thought he should be sober. Like, that's what he's doing. He's physically sober. He doesn't do AA. God love you. And I just had to back off. And since I did that, shocker, our relationship got better. And I remember Celeste, I was so mad because I had just had this baby and she would, and here's my husband not going to AA and I'm just convinced like this is the worst thing in the world. And she would say, why don't you walk over to the store? Now, I just had a baby. I had it surgically removed from me and I'm like pushing it around Glendale. Like, this doesn't feel like the time to be doing good deeds for other people. I'm barely holding it together. She's like, why don't you walk across to the Galleria and get him a thank you card? Just right in there. All things you're thankful for, because he's a great guy. I was like, same thing. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. No, I'm not doing it. I just wouldn't do it until finally I was like, your idea is so stupid. I'm just going to do your dumb thank you card. And then guess what? As I'm writing it, I'm like, oh, known you my whole life. And like, God brought us together and I have your child now. Like, somehow by the time I'm done writing the card, I'm like, actually you have some redeeming qualities. Like, I actually like you. And again, like, this is just, it's been a whole, and then I had another kid and I had to go through another layer of just like, this is what I think, how everything should be like this, but then it's just not. And I have had to get into acceptance around all of this stuff. So the reality of my life is, you know, I was getting in trouble in school. I had a multitude of failed relationships. I definitely could not stop drinking. You know, I remember, you know, like I said, I always defended my right to drink until one day I had the idea like, oh, maybe I drink too much. And then I just could not stop drinking. I was blown away. I could not believe that that was my story. And then I ended up here, and it has been such a journey. And just like, you know, the two 10-minute speakers had said, it's so hard to encompass the experiences that I've had here in such a short amount of time. But the reality is I went from, and this is the other thing too, is every time I figure something out on the AA spectrum, the pendulum switches to the other way. So I came in defiant and rude and AA stupid and I'm not even an alcoholic and all these things. And then I started to get it together. And then what happens? The pendulum swings the other way. And now I'm like, and you need to be an AA and this is how you do it. And you know, it's like, I have to always am struggling to find the balance and the acceptance. And then always, and then at the same time, just making sure that AA comes first, you know, like, and that's, it feels like, but don't my kids should come first, right? And it's like, no, it's actually AA, but my mom should come. No, it's actually AA. And so, you know, I, no better example than in the Pacific group has always explained to me like that I need to be constantly inconvenienced by Alcoholics Anonymous. And if at least that's happening, I can rest assured that I'm doing it right to some degree, you know, whatever right means, which I think I need to like remove from my vocabulary. But, you know, I try what an inventive time to find ways to be of service to one another, particularly when we can't be with each other physically. And so meetings like this and, you know, I've been on so many, not just Zoom calls with you guys, but just like friends and coworkers and connecting and sending things and picking things up for, you know, and I've been leaving things at the end of my driveway for my brother and my sister-in-law and, you know, and always finding the gratitude of, you know, Kenna had said it best of what I was thinking about coming here. She's like, maybe you've just been given the gift of time. You know, I'm here with my family. When's the next time I'm going to just like live with my parents for 6 weeks? And, you know, trying to find the silver linings and all the things. I'm on a million grat lists with so many people that are on here. And I just want to thank you guys for including me and letting me be a part of. I will keep coming. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Allison. And what we're going to do is for a brief moment, unmute everybody so they can thank you. Morgan, you there?
Oh, he's there.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the
conclusion. Thanks, Allison.
All right. Okay, I unmuted myself. Thank you. This is the conclusion of the Pacific Group meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You are cordially invited to meet with us again next Wednesday online. All the participants will be will again be sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right. We have a couple special announcements since I know of them. The first one is for Diane G for 32 years. So Diane, congratulations on that. And the next birthday is for Dean A for 39 years. And Dean, congratulations on 39 years. A couple other announcements. The International AA Conference has